Welcome to Just Beyond the Technology podcast and our mini-series on demonstrating digital transformation. I'm Sarah Knight, Head of Learning and Teaching Transformation at JISC, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Marika Guy and Mary Mahag, who are going to be discussing how assessment and feedback is being reimagined at University College London. Welcome, Marika and Mary. Marika and Mary, could you tell us a little bit about your roles at UCL?
So hi, Sarah. Yes, I'm head of digital assessment at UCL and I have a counterpart who's responsible for assessment delivery, but I'm responsible for the main digital space. So I manage the digital assessment team and that's a small team that was established in September 2021 to support online assessments at UCL. So we've got three, soon to be four, digital assessment advisors who work with nominated faculties and two learning technologists.
And hello, I'm Mary McCarg. So I'm the current Activities and Engagement Officer at UCL's Student Union, or Students Union UCL, and the future Union Affairs Officer. So I'm one of the Sabbatical Officer student leaders that's leading strategy there.
Thank you both. And Marika, could you tell us a little bit about University College London, just in terms of number of students that you're supporting and staff that you're working with?
Yes, of course. So we're a really big and broad institution. We've actually got 11 faculties and way over 60 departments. So we cover medical areas. We've got brain science and medical sciences, life science and population health sciences as well, but also arts and humanities. So we've got social and historical sciences, law, IOE, which is UCL's Faculty of Education and Society. And then we also have some other STEM areas that we cover as well, so including the built environment, engineering and maths and physical sciences. So we're really broad. We have around 43,000 students, over 14,000 employees, and we run about 440 undergraduate programmes and 675 postgraduate programmes. So there's also a huge amount of research centres. For example, we have the UCL Centre for Artificial Intelligence, which is obviously quite relevant in this space. We have around just over 50% international students, and we have over 150 nationalities at the university. Our main campus is in London, in Bloomsbury. We've got a quad on Gower Street, and you've probably seen pictures of the really beautiful portico and dome that we have. We've also got a new campus at UCL East, which is at the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park. And so that's just opened recently. And technology is really well used at the institution, but you can kind of imagine with that broadness and scale, it leads to a lot of diversity and different tools turn up all over the place. So consistency is a bit of a challenge there. And currently we're running around sort of 520,000 student to assessment instances. So a lot of assessments going on.
Thank you, Marika. And with, you've mentioned that diversity and range of students that are coming in from very different backgrounds, very different experiences, very, you know, range of countries. Mary, what are some of the challenges then that students may be experiencing in relation to their assessment and feedback?
Marika mentioned earlier, we've got such a vast institution, 11 faculties and 40-ish thousand students is absolutely huge. And so you get such vastly different experiences within that when it comes to assessment. But there are obviously some kind of through lines which everyone experiences. One of those is that there are just so many. So many students get burnt out and experience really bad effects from having to do so many different instances of assessments individually. And also different departments and faculties kind of deal with assessment and feedback in very different ways. So depending on if you're in one department in one faculty versus another, you may have like assessments weekly, like continuously throughout the year and get very limited feedback, or you may have just everything in one massive exam at the end, which is hours and hours long because it's online. And so your lecturers may inflate the time a bit to make it harder because they suspect people might cheat. Because of the size of the institution, you just have such crazily different experiences, which it's hard to tackle that disparity and make it so that everybody is experiencing kind of the same good level of assessment and feedback. I think that's one of the big challenges that UCL's having to face right now in this space, just leveling out the playing field so that everyone experiences the same thing no matter what they study.
That's really important, isn't it, Mary? Because that consistency, knowing what to expect in relation to assessment. But you also picked up on a really important point there around quality of feedback and timeliness of feedback. And that's something I think that comes through over and over again. And both of those factors really contribute to supporting students with their well-being and some of the challenges obviously we're seeing at the moment with students experiencing over-assessment and, as you say, that's making things harder, which is really, you know, what assessment is not about. Marika, you've worked quite closely with students recently, haven't you? Bringing in panels, you've obviously got your student advisors in assessment, you've got your student partners and ambassadors. Can you say a little bit more about some of the learning that's been coming through from that work?
Yeah, definitely. So it's really important for us that we include students as partners throughout this process. One event we ran recently is a Russell Group Collective event, which we had an AI student panel, which was amazing. We brought some students in, we worked with them in advance, and we actually wrote some principles around AI together, looking at areas like relevance and literacy and rigor. And there's so much to learn from those students, actually so much that we decided we would have some AI interns. So that's something that the institution's looking at bringing in at the moment. We have a student changemaker program. So we try to involve students as much as we can, and they actually create their own little projects around different areas, including assessment. There's quite a few going on around AI and assessment as well. So definitely trying to involve students and hear from them about the kind of experiences they're having and the challenges they're facing. So the type of things Mary's sort of touched on around like choking points and over-assessment and also consistency.
That's really interesting, Marika. And it's that sort of ongoing dialogue with students, isn't it? So that you're actually sort of learning and co-developing what good looks like around assessment and feedback. Mary mentioned some of the challenges, and those challenges, I think, are perhaps not new. I think they've been exemplified by the pandemic and the issues that sort of, you know, we're all facing now with the potential opportunities and threats that AI might bring. But at UCL, how are you overcoming some of those challenges, Marika?
Mary touched on kind of the consistency problem and also the feedback issue as well. And I think one of the things we're trying to do a bit more at the moment is a bit more data analysis and kind of learning analytics around assessment. That's definitely an area we want to work on and sort of help us identify patterns and trends of activity. And that's going to be a big piece of work going forward. So lots of work going on there. I think just generally supporting students in understanding academic practice is a really big area of work as well around academic integrity. So this has come to the fore very much with AI. And I think some of the things that we're trying to do there are bring in better sort of academic integrity resources and, you know, things like modules that they can take so that they really understand this area a bit better. So there's a real clarity for them around what's acceptable, what isn't acceptable in the current environment. So we want to, for example, we're designing some categorizations around AI so that we can help students understand with a particular assessment what is expected from them. So hopefully they'll be used across the board at the institution. So lots of work there, very much around kind of helping students to kind of understand the assessment process, really assessment literacy and feedback literacy as well. And that's not just for students, that's for staff, because we recognise it's across the board. We need everyone to upskill in this space.
Those are really important areas of work, Marika. And I think, you know, all our work with students to date has said staff need to be more explicit about expectations around assessment and feedback. And, you know, that ongoing dialogue, I think, as you've mentioned there, is really important between staff and students. Now, one of the things I think you touched on in your introduction, Marika, was the vast range of sort of systems and platforms that can be used to support assessment and feedback. And as you've mentioned, with the scale of departments and staff at UCL, there's obviously a wide range of different tools and platforms being used. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how you're perhaps gaining that understanding of what's being used where and how things can move forward?
Yeah, so our main learning environment, virtual learning environment, is Moodle. And we brought in Wiseflow as our main assessment platform during the pandemic. And that's useful of our centrally managed exams. But we also have a plethora of other assessment tools that are used by different discipline areas. So, for example, we've got Mahara for e-portfolios, and that's a really important area for us that we'd like to do more work on. We've got things like WordPress to use for blogging. We also have CrowdMark that's used by the maths department, and we're sort of investigating whether that could be brought across the institution a bit better. But there's other pockets of activities, for example, around video assessment, other particular tools used around software development, something called Submitties used. And then backing that all up, we have things like Turnitin going on in the background, obviously. But these are all areas that we're looking at for the future. I think our landscape is something that's very much up for discussion. We're hoping, again, to look at that ecosystem and maybe align and sort of where we can. So make sure that we understand the best tools that are for the particular assessment purpose. And I think that's something that definitely needs some work at the moment. People sometimes are using maybe the wrong tool for a particular assessment approach, and we'd really like to make sure that we share a bit more information about the pros and cons of different tools in the space. So yeah, lots of interesting work going on.
Really important piece of work, Marieke, as you say, to really understand that landscape of the ways in which different tools are being utilised, but also to fully utilise the potential of some of those tools as well. So, you know, really great to see that work in progress. Thinking now about staff, and you know, one of the areas of discussion that I think comes up quite frequently is the opportunity for staff to rethink their assessment practice. And obviously that has to link back into the ways in which we're designing the curriculum. You tell us how you're approaching that at UCL.
Yeah, so much of our work is hand in hand with the ARENA, which is our academic practice centre, and also our academic communication centre. It's important to mention those. But I think a lot of our current thinking around assessment redesign is coming out of our AI work. We have an AI experts group, and underneath that, there are four different theme areas. So we have one which is around academic skills, one around assessment design, one around regulations, one about opportunities for the future, which is looking at things like learning and teaching using AI. But some of the work we've been doing there is looking at kind of, firstly, how you can make your assessment suitable for this year going forward, if, you know, just minor tweaking of assessments, if that's the type of thing that our academics are looking at, because this is a long process, a real transition process to move to more diverse assessment types. So tweaking exam questions, essay questions, things like bringing in scenario-based questions and multiple choice, using that in the right manner. But then hopefully going forward, we're actually doing a big piece of work using Lydia Arnold's Top Trumps, where we're looking at bringing in a whole set of different AI techniques that can be used. And interestingly, that's actually something that's happening as part of the DISC AI experts group as well. So we hope to share some of our experiences around that. But I think it's just supporting staff with that. So I mentioned the digital assessment advisors, and they work very much with faculty. So one of their jobs is they worked on a series of landscape reports for all of those different faculties. So really understanding the kind of drivers at a faculty level and a departmental level around assessments. You know, maths and STEM areas have very different requirements to the humanities, where it might be more coursework based, or, you know, it's much more free thinking and e-portfolios would work, and maybe there's a lot more kind of peer assessment type approaches. But, you know, some of the STEM areas, it tends to be, for example, maths, it's very much around formulae and proofs, and there's a lot of very knowledge based learning, especially in the lower levels. So supporting that possibly through some different sort of assessment approaches, maybe even things like we're actually looking at things like the lockdown browser in an in-person setting as well, which is using Wiseflow. So that's quite an interesting area.
And Mary, how do you see students being involved in this process? Because obviously student views and student experience is really core to designing that effective experience. And, you know, assessment is such a core part of that. So from your perspective, what would you, how do you see students being involved in this process?
Yeah, so it's been mentioned before that there's lots of different kind of opportunities across UCL for students to get involved in these sorts of things. So change makers, being a student ambassador. But as a sabbatical officer, I am obliged to mention the Students' Union. So as the student representative body of UCL, we have hundreds, I think we're getting into the thousands of student representatives for all sorts of things. but what would be most fitting here is our academic representatives. So we have student academic reps at the course, the departmental, the faculty level, whose job it is to represent the views of the students at those different levels. And lots of the time, it's bringing forward issues with assessment, bringing forward student worries about AI and whether it's going to be allowed, stuff like that, up the levels through our democratic system to our sabbatical officers like me, who kind of are in lots of big meetings with UCL where these things get discussed. We also have our education zone where these issues get brought up and talked a lot. And so there's lots of different avenues and pathways for students to kind of get their voices heard in these spaces. It's kind of up to the student where they feel most comfortable and where they would like to say their piece, whether that's in the SU or whether they'd like to do something slightly more direct with, say, change makers. There's lots of different options out there that you can kind of jump into.
Thank you, Mary. And I think it's great for students to have those different pathways to be able to share their views and also have those opportunities of doing some of that project work in some of the changemaker projects as well. So you've got a wide range really of opportunities there, haven't you, for your students to get involved with and have that opportunity really shaping and influencing practice going forward. Really valuable. Now, Mary, I know, you know, in your position, you have obviously been through and experienced life at UCL and now in sort of your new role. But from your perspective, what forms of assessment do you feel can better support students for their future careers and the workplace?
I think for me, the assessment needs to be able to take into account the technology that students are going to have access to in the wider world and the skills that they will actually need for their careers. So there's no point in me going into the differences between, oh, well, a STEM student will need this kind of thing and a humanities student will need this kind, because it's useless to go into those details. I think what's more interesting and more important, more pressing, is that AI tools are becoming, as the months go on, more and more integrated into everyday tools. For example, Microsoft and Adobe are two of the really big ones for me. I use these tools every day as a humanities sciencey person. As AI tools become more integrated into everyday life, into everyday tools that people are going to be using not only at university, but outside of university in their future careers, I think universities are going to have to acknowledge that fact and kind of come up with a stance as to whether they want to teach their students about AI tools as part of just their regular education, in the same way that we're taught how to use a word processor or how to use a video editing software. You need to learn how to effectively use a tool like ChatGPT. That's going to be the big conversation going forward, because we're going to have access to these tools. We currently have access to these tools. So in our workplaces, for example, I would eventually like to break into the art sector. Adobe now has a very flashy new AI generative tool as part of its tool set. I need to learn how to use it. I need to know its limitations, because it has limitations. I need to learn how to, for example, write prompts well, and I need to know what the limitations of prompts are. That's something I didn't learn at university, because ChatGPT rolled around just as I graduated. But yeah, I think an acknowledgement of the tools out there and using them to make kind of creative assessment ideas is definitely something that I think UCL at least should be exploring.
Thank you, Mary. You've set the challenge there now, haven't you? And absolutely, tools have got to be fit for purpose, haven't they? They've got to be that replicable experience that students are going to have in the workplace. And obviously recognizing, as you've said, you know, that there are those differences there, but there's also some sort of essential tools and capabilities that students are going to need and employers are going to be expecting. So Marika, you know, Mary set that challenge. What are some of the barriers to achieving that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mary's completely right. Dr. Jan MacArthur, who I really love from Lancaster, talks about how we need to assess for a world beyond assessment. And I think that's one of the key things we need to keep at the front of our mind. But you're right, there are some barriers. We've already mentioned literacy, both for staff and students, is a big one there. So knowing how to use those type of tools within their assessments is a huge challenge. There are other challenges. So, for example, we spend a lot of time dealing with the PSRBs and the accreditation process, so the things that we need to keep in mind there. We mentioned the over-assessment, the modularization of assessments as well. Scaling everything up is a really huge challenge for UCL. We always need to have scale at the very forefront of our mind. And sometimes some of the more kind of interesting, unique assessments take quite a lot of effort. And it's just, how can we do that at scale? I think one area I'm very interested in at the moment is around feedback. This is where academics put a huge amount of their energy into. And as we know, quite a lot of feedback goes to waste, unfortunately. That's partly because it's been written or shared in some way and it hasn't necessarily been received and utilised. So I think there's lots that we can do there around improving feedback literacy and maybe actually having academics be much smarter with the type of feedback that they give out, make sure that it's much more strategic, providing it in the right moment in time. So it's really helping with that learning process rather than just being very much after the event. And so I think that there's lots we could do there. So one area we'd really like to look at more is improving feedback literacy and a lot of consistency around there and shifting that focus to what students actually do with that feedback as well. So I think potentially an area for us to work on, but we recognise there's a huge amount of challenges given from by our students and making sure that we keep really authentic assessments that are very much at the forefront and that we think about their long-term future and their prospects as a graduate, because that's really very much what, you know, graduates are thinking about. It's about their skills as they go forward.
Marieke, you've mentioned and Mary has mentioned AI, and I don't think we could complete this podcast with perhaps a touching on it and of course the link it has with assessment. The sector is grappling with how to respond to the use of AI, and you've already mentioned some really innovative ways in which UCL are addressing that. But could you sort of expand on that a bit more and just share sort of some of the advice that you are giving to students about the potential risks as well as the benefits, but also the work you're doing with staff as well?
Yeah, I think it's worth sharing a little story from one of our academics who's actually been working in this space. So he's in the Bartlett School of Energy and Environment and Resources, and he's actually been integrating AI into his assessments. And what he did was he paired the AI assessment task with a small data collection process in which he shared a survey with the students before and after the assignment, sort of asking about their attitude to generative AI. And he basically said that the main trend that he found was that before the task, students were very polarized in their views. So they felt very much that they either thought AI was going to save the world or that they thought AI was absolutely terrible and had nothing to offer them. And then after the task, they found that students were much more critical in their thinking and they kind of really became a little bit better understanding how AI itself works, like the limitations and the advantages of it. All of them felt that it was a really beneficial task. So I think that there lies the rub. We need to expose students to AI to make sure that they really understand how AI works. And so that's very much around our messaging that we're trying to give to academics. We're creating a huge range of resources that academics and students can use to support this process. But the very first step in all of that challenge is for academics to talk to their students about AI. Let's not brush it under the carpet. We need to start having discussions and understanding it and understanding how it works. We've also been working on a big categorization of tools, which is really interesting, which looks at things like the ethical values of different tools and the benefits of different things, the data sets, the different tools used, so that students can really understand the implications of using different tools. I know this is an area that Mary's really interested in. I've heard her talk about Bard and some of the data sets before. So I think that's a really key thing, understanding that not all tools are the same and that actually there are things behind these different tools. So having that conversation, that's where we're going to start things. And then we're going to all build up our expertise together, I think. And there's already lots of exciting ways that AI is being used by across the institution. So I'm looking forward to hearing more case studies as we go forward.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing that too, Marieke. Mary, did you want to come in there and just add anything from your perspective?
If I add anything, it will be a tangent about the limitations of different AI tools and why universities should be developing their own. But I mean, I can do a small tangent. For me, when ChatGPT first came out, I remember seeing so many different stories on the tab, basically saying, oh, somebody used ChatGPT to hand in something, but it can't reference. It makes up references and stuff like that, because it's not built to write in an academic context. It's not built to, the data set it's trained on is so vast, but it doesn't teach it the how to reference something. It's just figuring out what the next word in a sentence could probably be. That doesn't mean that we can't in the future have a tool that could provide suggestions for references for students based on a prompt or based on a piece of work they've written. That tool doesn't exist yet. Universities could maybe work on something like that. Universities could work on an AI generative tool that, or not even a generative tool, an AI tool that can help assist students in whether it's referencing or correctly formatting their work, stuff like that. It would just take a bit of time to develop and a very strong computer science AI department. I think it would be very interesting and really cool if especially a sector leader like UCL in research could be doing something like that, because we have at the moment in the market all of the AI tools that are available are, so you've got OpenAI, which is kind of the big newcomer who make ChatGPT, but all the other voices in the space are massive Silicon Valley types, Microsoft, Adobe, etc., etc., etc. They're the ones that are making the new tools to integrate into their current portfolio. I think it would be incredibly interesting if a university was to start making a tool. Yeah, the possibilities of what could be developed are massive. Just a tangent for you.
We'll have to feed that idea into our AI center at JISC, Mary. So we might have some follow-up conversations on that. We've obviously been speaking about staff and student views, but one of the sort of key drivers for supporting the environment in which all of the assessment practice is going to thrive is having support from senior leadership. And sort of a question perhaps to you both to end on, say, what should senior leaders be doing to support an institutional approach to rethinking assessment and feedback?
So I think one of the big things is senior leaders really need to communicate a clear vision. And that's definitely the work we're starting to do at UCL. They need to be big and brave and bold out there and really put their foot down and say, this is the way we want to go. They need to, as I mentioned, bear in mind that assessment is about the future for students. And they need to allow staff and students to have the conversation around assessment and begin to really discuss and get to the detail there, because some of these conversations are very, very difficult. We've already talked about students as partners. That's a given. That really has to be part of the discussions. And then I think provide resources and support so staff can really participate in those conversations as well. That means giving them the space and the energy to do that. So very much encouraging staff to involve in CPD when they can. And you know, make sure that they get themselves trained up. And I suppose the last thing I just want to say, because it's very much about advocating for my group, is they need to invest in experts and then they need to trust them as well. So I feel that's where my team comes in. We don't have all the answers, but we're doing some really amazing work with faculties to really get to the heart of the questions, to really understand the needs in different spaces. And I think that that's what you need to do. You need to make sure you have that expert group who can really have those conversations at the coalface and understand the type of, you know, challenges that people are facing, the academics down there working with the students. So lots of different things we'd like from our senior leaders, I think.
Thank you, Marika. And Mary, anything you want to add to that from a student perspective?
I mean, I'll double down on everything that was just said, absolutely. But I think also I'd like to just mention and highlight that senior leaders really need to listen to the students as much as possible and communicate with them as transparently and as clearly as possible. I think that's what's needed, especially with an institution as big as ours. Oftentimes messages from senior leaders or like clear vision doesn't get communicated all the way down to students in the departmental level. Students at the departmental level don't know what the senior leaders at UCL want half the time or what their aim or strategy is. I think recently we did a social media poll in the SU to see how many people were aware of UCL's current vision for AI use in assessment. And a minority actually knew, which is, you know, not great. But yeah, just making sure that these plans and these visions get translated down and properly communicated with the student body as much as possible, and that you keep listening to students, whether that's through change makers, these sorts of programs, or whether that's through working closely with the SU, because we're the student elected body, so we know the voice and what the students want. Just making sure you're listening to what students want and their worries for their futures, and working with them to kind of rethink how their degrees are built up. I think that can only lead to good change.
What a fantastic message to end on, Mary. Thank you both so much for your time today. It has been a real privilege to hear about all the work that you're engaged with at UCL, and so much good practice to share wider. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.